This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents Kintsugi Wellness, the Japanese art of nourishing mind, body, and spirit by Candice Kumai. Read by Caitlin Kelly. With an introduction read by the author. Enhancement. This digital audiobook comes with a complimentary enhancement PDF containing the recipes from the print edition of this book. Please download this PDF for free from your audiobook provider.
Introduction. It's taken me 30 plus years to write this book, not because I didn't want to write it. The truth is I've always wanted to write it, but I was also very afraid of putting words on the page. After all, the prospect was intimidating. Japanese culture is largely focused on intricate detail, precision, and preparation. I never felt like I was good enough or ready enough to write a book on the cultural traditions I grew up with and the philosophies that have shaped my life and career. I decided that the only way that I would ever feel ready or qualified to write on this topic was to go back to my mother's ancestral home in Japan, to spend time visiting with all the family members whom I don't see often enough, to taste the flavors of Japan, to observe its traditions and rituals, to feel a part of its rhythms and its pulse. And so, a few years ago, I bought a ticket, I packed my bags, and I headed east. I've explored Japan many times since I was 5, but I knew from the moment I arrived on this trip that it would be different. And from the moment the wheels of the plane touched down, I felt like I was home. I told myself to be brave, to open myself up to this opportunity, and to learn all that could be learned. Truth be told, I was fresh off a breakup, and my heart was hurting. My mind felt foggy, my body was tired. I felt broken, and I secretly hoped that this journey would help to heal me. Over the course of 10 trips over the past few years, I experienced Japan during all four seasons. In the spring, I explored hanami, flower viewing, during the cherry blossom festival, and I studied matcha tea ceremony with my great aunt Takuko in southern Japan. During the summer, I cooked homemade Japanese meals with my cousins in Tokyo, and I stayed with the monks in the mountains of Koyasan. During the fall, I hiked the holy temples of Shikoku Island and learned how to cook with a Japanese washoku teacher back in Tokyo. In the winter, I drank sake with my friends in Niigata and ate delicious nabe hot pots in Matsuyama. And I visited my favorite onsen baths in the Ie Valley. Japan experiences all four seasons, and the Japanese adapt to and appreciate all of them. The rain, the snow, the storms, whatever nature brings. One day I was in Kyoto observing a kintsugi master, Tsuyoshi-san, at work at his home studio. He reminded me of my grandfather, an impressionist painter, with his wisdom, artistic character, and a massive amount of talent. Carefully, he sealed the pieces of broken pottery until they were whole again and painted cracks with gold. As I watched this talented man put his energy and soul into bringing shattered vessels back to life, it hit me. Kintsugi is the self-care we all need and deserve. Kintsugi is applied to vessels that are not just broken, but beloved. The gold that seals the cracks is applied with an artist's care and devotion. The finished product is more beautiful than it was before. We deserve this too. And we shouldn't have to wait until we feel broken to give ourselves this gift. It is through a process of self-care and self-acceptance that we can heal, flourish, and grow. My journey taught me so much, and in the end, I left Japan feeling healed in mind, body, and spirit. My experience of learning how to put myself back together made me stronger, tougher, and more resilient. As I was writing this book, I talked to my girlfriends and heard so many similar stories. I realized that too many of us feel broken or damaged. We're simply not good enough, too much of the time. We're so busy being hard on ourselves that it's easy to lose sight of the fact that we are also deserving of the self-care it takes to maintain our health and our happiness. Golden Repair celebrates our imperfections. It teaches us that we are more beautiful for our flaws, our battle scars, our lessons learned. The philosophies of Japanese life are the guiding force of this book. I've organized them into four parts: mind, nourish, lifestyle, and heart. In each of these sections, you'll find some of the simple rituals that helped heal me. In Japan, rituals are an important part of everyday life. These practices are prompts that remind you of what's important and ground you in the present while honoring the past. It is my hope that this book will offer you the golden repair that you need to feel whole, vibrant, happy, and healthy. And I'm excited to share my heritage and my family's traditions and my heart. Karada ni kiyotsukete kudasai. Please take care of yourself. Candace Kumai. And now I'm going to leave you for a little while and let you listen to this audiobook read by Caitlin Kelly, a professional narrator. I'll catch up with you in a few hours to wrap it up. Happy listening.
Part 1. Strengthen. 丈夫にする。元気づける。 1. Kintsugi, the Japanese art of golden repair. Translated from Japanese kanji meaning kin, gold. Tsugi, repair, inherit, succeed, continue. Kintsugi is my heart. It is my life's anthem. Kintsugi made me who I am today. The practice of kintsugi, repairing broken vessels by sealing the cracks with lacquer and carefully dusting them with gold powder, is a remarkable art. The Japanese believe the golden cracks make the pieces even more precious and valuable. It's beautiful to think of this practice as a metaphor for your life. To see the broken, difficult, or painful parts of you as radiating light, gold, and beauty. Kintsugi teaches you that your broken places make you stronger and better than ever before. When you think you are broken, you can pick up the pieces, put them back together, and learn to embrace the cracks. Many of us are struggling to be better, to recharge, or to keep up. We're constantly searching for the secret to self-improvement. But we know, on some deep level, that there is no secret. In order to heal and feel whole, we have to do the work. For many years, I went through life with parts of my heart that were broken. I wasn't aware of it then, but I wasn't taking proper care of myself. I constantly felt as if I needed to keep going. I was very hard on myself. Inside, I carried a lot of lingering anger, sometimes sadness, and almost always, a feeling of needing to belong. I never ever felt quite good enough, and was always seeking validation from outside. Growing up, Mom and Dad were extremely tough on my older sister Jenny and me. They expected the very best from us, always. I would later come to realize that their philosophy was rooted in the traditional Japanese practices of kaizen, continuous improvement, gambatte, do your best, kiyotsukete, take great care, and kansha, gratitude. Jenny and I were shown these practices at an early age, and we always carried them with us. When challenges inevitably arose, we used them as opportunities to heal, to work harder, to do better, to improve, and ultimately, to be resilient through tough times. The Japanese have a saying, "Oya no se o mite, ko wa sodatsu." It means, children learn by watching what their parents do, not by hearing what they say. My parents did not tell us about these Japanese practices. Instead, they showed us, always leading by example. They taught Jenny and me that if we followed these teachings, they would help us to become exactly who we are and to find what we are looking for. These practices will do the same for you. But the path I'm talking about is not the path of least resistance. It is more like a pavement that is slowly being laid before us as we take the next steps on our journey. Your journey is your story. Unlike anyone else's, what makes you so special is the path that you are in the process of forging right now. Your story contains everything that makes you individually precious, and your story is a gift to the world. On the surface, it may seem as if I am confident, and perhaps even strong, but the truth is, I am still working to fill my cracks. Across my heart, you will find cracks caused by heartbreak, not feeling accepted by society, feeling different, and childhood memories of never feeling good enough. For many years, living with these cracks made me feel incomplete. For the first 12 years of my career, I never took a break. In perfect Japanese form, I worked hard and gave only my very best, known as ganbatte, which you'll learn more about. But I wasn't taking good care of myself. I never took breaks, other than the times when I would travel to see family during the holidays. And even then, I never stopped working. I was afraid that if I stopped, others would catch up to me. Then I began to study my heritage and piece together my past. It took a lot of hard work, but slowly, the cracks began to mend. I have been traveling to Japan since I was in kindergarten. In recent years, Mom and I would meet up in Japan to visit family. Each time she would note, "Don't forget to take a few of ba-chans," my Japanese grandmother's, things. Inevitably, after a few trips around the globe, some of the items broke, but I never threw them away. I worked on saving the pieces so I could seal them with lacquer and dust them with gold. I began painting on quiet weekends, sealing all the cracks with golden repair. This was a therapeutic practice for me and a way to connect with an art form that has become reflective of my life. In Japan, we honor our elders and treasure those who have passed. During the writing of this book, my sweet and loving ba-chan passed away peacefully at age 96. It was time to pay homage to the matriarch in our family, who raised four daughters just after World War II ended. Ba-chan was absolutely radiant, warm, and loving, and could always light up a room. Mom, Jenny, and I went back to Japan for Ba-chan's one-year memorial service. We wanted to pay our respects and honor her life, along with the rest of our family. We planned to see the cherry blossoms together for the first time in over a decade. During that trip, I went to study the traditional art of kintsugi with a kintsugi master, Tsuyoshi Sensei. He generously allowed me to visit his home art studio in Kyoto, where he shared his work and taught me the history of kintsugi. I learned that kintsugi is a centuries-old art form that first became popular in the mid-15th century. During the Muromachi period, 1334 to 1573 AD, if a Japanese servant broke an object of their master's, they would turn the broken object over to a kintsugi artist to have it repaired. But it didn't stop there. In some cases, the servant would take his or her own life as a sign of honesty and honor. I know, it's super extreme, and I couldn't believe it either. Luckily, this custom is no longer practiced. But over time, kintsugi became a national art form, and a way not just to mend broken vessels, but also to celebrate imperfection. As I studied kintsugi with Tsuyoshi Sensei, I started to wonder how I could begin to repair the broken pieces in my own life. One day soon after I'd returned from this trip, I received a message from someone named Sarah, a perfect stranger. She invited me on a trip to Hana, Maui for an experience called the immersion. I had no idea who else would be there or what we'd be doing. The itinerary was vague. I almost politely passed on the opportunity, but something inside urged me to accept. I packed up my bags and flew nearly 5,000 miles to the magical island of Maui. When I landed, I was greeted by the staff for the immersion and began to meet the other guests. The first person I met was Paul, an amazing photographer from Chicago, followed by Mikkel, a nutritionist from Nashville. One by one, the Sprinter van at the Maui airport began to fill up with some of the most amazing people. The van took us on a 3-hour excursion to Hana, a magical spot known for its healing, serenity, and peace. There were 50 guests in all, and over the course of 3 days, we were encouraged to work on self-improvement through group workshops. The only thing considered mandatory was to simply be present. By the third day, we had all learned so much about one another. We had shared deep-rooted pain, illness, personal struggles, deep loss, and deaths in our families. Everything. Midway through our class that day, our instructor asked if anything had come up for us. Everyone fell silent. The truth was, a lot had come up for me. Though I hadn't felt comfortable sharing my story, a tiny little voice inside me said, "Go, Candace. It's your turn. It's okay." I took a deep breath and slowly walked to the front of the class. 49 pairs of eyes were all on me. I started to tremble, and my palms were super clammy, but I opened my mouth to speak. "Hi, guys. I'm Candace. I'm from New York City, by way of San Diego," I started. "About a year ago, my best friend left me." I went on to explain how one day, my boyfriend of a few years came home to the apartment we shared and suddenly told me he was leaving. 30 minutes later, he was on his way to the airport. And just like that, the life I had was broken open. As I shared my story, the group at the immersion was so silent, you could hear a pin drop. I told them how I had tried to soldier on through the pain. I shared how my family encouraged me not to ruminate, but to move on immediately. In traditional Japanese form, I had been raised to believe there was no time to feel sorry for myself. As I looked around the room with teary eyes, I saw tears begin to roll down others' cheeks. I'll never forget what it was like to look around a room of 49 faces, professional athletes, producers, writers, directors, singers, actors, you name it, and feel that they understood how it felt to be broken. Our instructor then told me to place 2 hands over my heart. The people near me were told to put their hands on me, and the rest of the group was to attach themselves to someone who was touching me. 49 minds and 100 hands were all linking back to my heart. Then our teacher encouraged everyone to send me compassion. A flood of love and energy washed over me. I can still feel the power of that energy to this day. I understood that each and every piece of me could be put back together. I also understood that I wasn't alone. In this safe space, our masks came off, and everyone began to share their own cracks. This experience showed me how everyone has places where they are broken. Everyone has the power to heal themselves and to come out even stronger. Over the course of our time together, a group of perfect strangers turned into a support group. We shared our stories and our secrets. It was so comforting to see that all of these people, who I consider to be strong, successful leaders, were imperfect, and their imperfections made them even more extraordinary. Each of the stories shared that day gave others permission to share and repair. The more we talked, the more we all accepted that it's okay to show your cracks. While we may not always want to be brave, we must remember that when we put up walls or don't share our story, we do a disservice to everyone around us. Through Kintsugi, we learn it is okay to hurt and grieve. It is okay to be vulnerable. It is okay to accept and allow yourself the time to share, to open up, to exercise compassion. After the immersion, I felt more mindful and aware. I was more attentive to the present moment and able to experience joy in the little things, but I was going to have to learn how to mend my cracks on my own in real life. I was going to have to do the work. Once I got back home to New York, the practice became more real to me. I was going to have to do the work of golden repair on my own. Yet I held on to the sunshine, the gratitude, the acceptance, and the growth for my experience with a group of strangers. Wherever you are right now, I urge you to take a solid look back on all that you have experienced and all that you have healed and sealed from. More often than not, we do not pay attention and we do not track our progress. We live in a culture where we expect perfection and condemn ourselves when we are not perfect or when things don't go our way. But sometimes it takes years of persistence, hard work, and dedication to better hone and own your perfected craft before you can see the bigger picture. You already have many cracks that have been honored and sealed. Have a think on that and give yourself credit for going through this journey of life. It's a pretty amazing feeling when you finally realize you are right when you're meant to be. Kintsugi marks your progress, so you do not forget. Like a map of your heart, Kintsugi shows us the lessons and reveals the truth. As much as the struggle, the pain, the trials and tribulations sucked, even when things were not your fault, all of life's hurt can be mended through golden repair. When we change our mindset about our past, we have come out of the struggles as a much more beautiful and refined version of ourselves. Your kintsugi cracks become gold by doing the work. Kintsugi teaches you to be kind to yourself. The spirit of kintsugi is also about forgiveness. It's a practice of self-love. Accepting your cracks means being accepting and loving toward yourself. You must forgive yourself first, before you are capable of forgiving another. As you work toward this, you'll see that the most beautiful, meaningful parts of yourself are the ones that have been broken, mended, and healed. Kintsugi is a continuous practice. Learning is the key to kintsugi, and we never stop learning. I have consistently spoken these soft words to my tough heart. Candace, you have much to learn. To practice Japanese wellness, you must approach it with an open and honest heart. I am committed to these practices and committed to continuously improving every day. But I promise you, all it takes is openness, and you can learn. Your cracks make you beautiful. The physical art of kintsugi is beautiful. But that's not what this book is about. The part I find moving, and what I wanted to share with you, is the analogy of embracing your past wounds, scars, pain, and internal struggle, and accepting their value, your deepest pain, your biggest fears, all the struggles you've gone through, have forever changed you. If you could see my heart, you would see there are golden cracks all over it. Some run deep, some are still being sealed, and many more are still to come. Your heart looks very much the same. Kintsugi is life's way of saying, nobody's perfect. The path is not straight. In fact, your hardest challenges, deepest wounds, and greatest fears are actually among the most beautiful, precious, and admirable parts of you. You will have to do the work. What is the work, you ask? I've broken it down into 10 principles. Wabi-sabi. Admire imperfection Gamon. Live with great resilience. Kiyotsukete. Learn to take care. Eiyoshoku. Nourish your body. Ganbatte. Always do your best. Kaizen. Continuously improve. Shikata ga nai. Accept what cannot be helped. Yuimaru. Care for your inner circle. Kansha. Cultivate sincere gratitude. Osettai. Be of service to others. Welcoming gifts. Along with kintsugi, these are the practices that have helped me. It's almost a step-by-step program. These are the 10 philosophies that guide my work ethic, my inspiration, and my authenticity. And they keep me going. We'll delve into each one, along with my daily practices, in the coming chapters. Hajimemashou! Let's begin! 2. Wabi-sabi. Celebrate imperfection. My mother always says, life cannot be perfect forever. When I was growing up, I used to think it was a sad thing to say. But as I've gotten older, I've come to appreciate her perspective. She says these words matter-of-factly, because they are true. Life can't be perfect forever. In other words, life will exhaust you, it will crush you sometimes, and that's okay. Holding ourselves up to a perfect standard is ultimately defeating, because perfection is fleeting. And imperfection is nothing to be afraid of. My mom's attitude toward imperfection is rooted in the Japanese idea of wabi-sabi. Like kintsugi, wabi-sabi celebrates life's imperfections, its tough stretches, and even its dark corners. It reminds us that life is transient, imperfection is natural, and there is beauty to be found in simplicity. Wabi-sabi. The word wabi refers to being alone, or loneliness. Wabishi means alone. In poetry, the word wabi typically refers to something that is simple, humble, and in line with nature. It can also mean a simple, austere beauty. Think of a monk who is at peace living with very little. Meanwhile, sabi refers to the passage of time, the process of aging, and the fleeting nature of all things. You might be familiar with wabi-sabi as an aesthetic or design idea. In Japan, our architecture, pottery, and home decor is often simple but elegant. A wabi-sabi approach to design embraces simplicity and imperfection. For example, a vase of wilting flowers may be just as beautiful and appreciated as a vase of freshly picked blossoms. Similarly, wabi-sabi might celebrate an architectural flaw, like the crumbling facade of an old building. In the Western world, where we are often obsessed with symmetry and perfection, wabi-sabi can help us appreciate and reframe what we think of as ugly. The concept of wabi-sabi dates back to the 12th century. Japan had gone through a brutal civil war, and the imperial court culture shifted to a military regime ruled by shoguns. For much of the population, it felt like death was always around the corner. Within this changing landscape, the concept of wabi-sabi emerged to capture the beauty that is found in transience and impermanence. The aesthetic side of wabi-sabi came about in the 15th and 16th centuries through the emergence of the Japanese tea ceremony. These aristocratic gatherings became simpler and sparer and began to take on the aesthetic that is now widely associated with Japan. Simple earth-toned pottery, cracked or asymmetrical teacups, and iron teapots. To this day, the Japanese tea ceremony is known for its beauty and elegance. In modern times, we can see why the Japanese would embrace this philosophy. After all, the land of Japan is far from perfect. The weather can be extreme, with cold winters, hot summers, and rainy seasons. And there's always the chance of a natural disaster, like an earthquake or tsunami. But instead of living in fear, or feeling like they've gotten a bad deal, The Japanese accept that there's always a bit of uncertainty and darkness to be found in the big picture of life. Perfection seems wonderful, but it is always fleeting. Good times cannot and will not exist forever. And the more you embrace and plan for the fact that tough times will happen, the easier it is to survive them. When I was last in Japan, I had the honor of spending time at the temples in Koyasan and in Shikoku with Buddhist monks. To say that monks embrace imperfection, simplicity, and transience is an understatement. The monks shave their heads, turning away from vanity, as it is an unnecessary distraction. And yet, these men radiate the most beautiful light in the world. The monks devote their lives to prayer, sending light into dark places. In order to do that, they first must understand and accept that dark places exist. The monks know better than anyone that there is beauty to be found in distortion, in wilted flowers, in a broken heart, in our missteps and mistakes. There is beauty in struggle. Accepting imperfection has been a lifelong challenge for me. It started as a young child. Growing up in a predominantly white neighborhood, as the daughter of a Japanese immigrant mother and Polish immigrant father, I felt different. I was brought up differently than the other kids. My parents were strict and wouldn't tolerate anything less than my best. And obviously, I looked different. As I got older, I was teased for being different. Kids asked mean questions and sometimes called me racist names. Like any young girl, I wanted to be beautiful, popular, and accepted. I wanted people to like me for who I was. When I was 15, a modeling agency approached me at my school's career day. They told me I was tall, lanky, and exotic. It was certainly unexpected, but I was curious and decided to give it a try. From there, modeling became a side gig that grew into something more. All throughout college, I continued to work as a fit model, meaning a live mannequin for fashion designers, not to be confused with a fitness model, and print model. I worked all over the US and the globe in the name of fashion. While the lifestyle was glam, always chasing perfection was not. I had designers measuring my thighs, butt, waist, and hips. I body-shamed myself constantly, and my deep-rooted love for cooking called just as my modeling career peaked. I had to learn to balance culinary school with tiny bikinis and sample-size jeans. How fun. For a decade, I told myself I had to be perfect. At our weekly measurements, if you were a quarter inch off perfection, you could lose your job. Although I no longer get measured on a regular basis, those days of chasing perfection are still ingrained in my mind. As I've gotten older, I'm not really concerned with the circumference of my hips, but the feeling of needing to be perfect still haunts me. I constantly have to remind myself that not only is perfect a myth, but that imperfect is nothing to fear. Just as wabi-sabi can teach us to appreciate the beauty of a wilted flower or a chipped teacup, it can also teach us to appreciate and reconsider our physical forms. Whether it's a scar, laugh lines, freckles, or gray hairs, wabi-sabi recognizes that difference is beauty. Imperfection is the natural condition of everything. So much of beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And the more we open ourselves up to wabi-sabi, the more we begin to appreciate how our differences are what make us beautiful. You know how a leather jacket, Converse high tops, or jeans just look cooler when they're slightly worn in? That's wabi-sabi. I now find beauty in unexpected places. I find it in wrinkles. I find it in the way the sunlight hits the branches of a bare tree in the winter. I find beauty in kind eyes and kind hearts. I find beauty in the most giving people. I find beauty in humble people, and those who are honest and sincere. Here are a few more things you can do to help you bring wabi-sabi into your perspective. Reset your way of thinking. The changing of seasons is a nice prompt to get back to nature. You can go for a simple walk, hike, or run, and take the time to contemplate. Observe the imperfections all around you, whether it's the changing colors of the leaves, the moss growing on the rocks, or moldy bark on a tree. It's all in the eye of the beholder. Imperfection is part of the natural order. Trade judgment for acceptance. We all have preconceived ideas about the people we meet, and we are quick to judge one another. Everyone has an inner beauty, and if you choose not to look through a lens of judgment, you will be astounded by the beauty you see. Forgive. People aren't perfect. They make mistakes, or as my friend Richard once told me, people will malfunction. Part of wabi-sabi practice is learning to accept and forgive. It isn't always easy, but it is better to let go and forgive than to live with a knot in your stomach or a grudge in your heart. You'll be able to sleep easier at night, and you'll make room in your life for more positive experiences. Stop comparing. It's all too easy in the age of social media to compare ourselves to others. But if we stop comparing, we can allow ourselves to find more peace and acceptance for ourselves. Each morning, before I touch any of my electronic devices, I like to meditate. It gives me a chance to clear my head and erase any judgment, anxiety, worry, or doubt that I have about my life or my future. Simplify. Balance is about slowing down and appreciating what we have. Practicing wabi-sabi can also mean simplifying your life. You already have everything you need right at this very moment. None of the bells and whistles can come with you when you leave. And hey, guess what? Shiny new things won't solve anything, and they aren't important. Work on self-acceptance. This is probably one of the hardest things we can learn. Self-acceptance is a process, but I've found it helpful to spend time alone. When you're alone, you don't have to worry about a persona. You can take off your mask and just do you. Accept that every person is flawed, including you. Believe that everyone is doing their best with what they have to work with. That includes you. Let up on yourself. And remember that there is no standard you need to measure up to. You're really special the way that you are. It's not just your mom telling you this. It's me. Your imperfections make you unique. Look at wisdom as beauty. My sister and I often have conversations about how wonderful it would be if society valued character and integrity as much as it did beauty and power. Appreciate someone who has taught you something, or inspired you, or whose presence has brought you enjoyment. If there are elders in your life who are close to you, whether it's a grandparent, a neighbor, or a mentor, spend time with them and appreciate their wisdom. I was once told, "You can't pour from an empty cup." When I finally let go of my need for a perfect relationship, I realized I didn't need anyone else to make me great. Then something crazy happened. I began to accept the imperfect moments, the imperfect people, the imperfect days, my imperfect self. I began to accept the difficult conversations, the struggle, the compromise, the discomfort. So much of wabi-sabi is about changing your mindset to see life from a different perspective. Appreciate the struggles just a bit more, and life will feel a little bit easier. Without the struggles, you will never be able to tap into your strength and your real potential. Sometimes the goal of living isn't all about winning. Sometimes it's about being, enduring, experiencing, learning, trying, failing. When you come out on the other side, you'll be grateful for the beautiful, imperfect view. Mono no aware, the pathos of life, a gentle sadness. As a culture, Americans are somewhat obsessed with positivity. From a young age, we are taught to approach life with a positive, can-do attitude. American children are taught to look on the bright side, and that if they think good thoughts, they will manifest good things. Japanese culture embraces a more realistic approach. Life can't always be perfect. There will be challenges, and if you expect them, they won't take you by surprise. In Japanese culture, we are taught to embrace the difficulties with empathy and mindfulness. The phrase, mono no aware, literally translates to the pathos of things. Like wabi-sabi, it refers to the transience of life. There is a mild sadness in this idea, mourning or grieving the fleeting nature of life. And in Japanese culture, this is accepted as a reality rather than something to fight. Mono no aware is about seeing things as they are. Sometimes they will be good, and sometimes they will be bad. Without darkness, light cannot exist. Mono no aware teaches us that while bad things do inevitably happen, it is our chance to practice empathy and compassion for others. I have an 82-year-old sensei friend, Yamazaki-san, who lives in the Noto Peninsula of Japan. Yamazaki is a former college professor and a beloved mentor to me. He and I write letters to each other, and I always find a light and wisdom in his correspondence that is hard to describe. He recently wrote me a note that sums up the idea of mono no aware beautifully. Noto no umi no yuke kirei desu. Kogane no namiho no oku ni higashizumu. Jōmon amara mori o togikimu. Pious people worship the rising sun, waiting for the sun to rise out of the sea or to set. A beautiful and moving sight. In my fishing village in Noto, we can also enjoy the sun setting into the sea. Most Japanese people know the crane wife, which is a story of a bewitched bird that married a poor but kind-hearted man. When it was retold by Mr. Junji Kinoshita in 1949, it leapt to fame. His version is called Yuzuru, the literal meaning of which is Twilight Crane. The last scene is, in time, the crane wife was seen to fly up and away in the twilight sky. Beautiful, but sorrowful. Since I came across the folktale, I've enjoyed seeing the sunset, especially watching fishermen row out to sea for night fishing, their boats moving in a dim silhouette against the glow of the western sky. When we embrace the concept of mono no aware, we accept that in every life, some bad will come. It is okay to be sad. It is healthy to feel deeply. And it is completely normal to struggle. Allow yourself to feel the full range of your emotions, both positive and negative. These are the moments during which we can better learn to dive deep and accept ourselves through each facet of life. Our lives are forever changing, as are we. 3. Gaman. Endure pain with patience, resilience, and tolerance. In 2011, Japan was hit by a devastating series of events, a 9.1 magnitude earthquake. The largest earthquake ever to hit Japan took place 231 miles northeast of Tokyo. The quake caused a massive tsunami with 30-foot waves, damaging several nuclear reactors at the Fukushima Daiichi power plant. The disaster claimed over 22,000 lives and cost billions of dollars in damage. As the rest of the world grieved the enormous loss and sent humanitarian aid, the Japanese people did what they always do. They endured. Beginning at an early age, the Japanese teach their children the principle of gamam, the ability to endure by remaining calm, patient, and resilient. When a Japanese child is hungry or complaining, her mom will respond to her, gamam. Traditionally, the Japanese do not complain or react dramatically to challenging times. Rather, they prefer to be still and allow the storm to pass, as they quietly endure the changes along the course. We need not wait for a storm to enter the picture in order to practice gamam. We practice gamam in our everyday lives. No matter what is going on around you, a stressful work day, a bad mood, that was me today, a misunderstanding, you can learn to practice resilience. For me, gamam typically takes the form of my self-care routine. Meditating each morning helps to ease my mind, while getting some form of daily exercise helps me to stay calm and focused. Getting the right nutrition, more on that in the next chapter, and a good night's sleep give me the strength to endure the challenges each day brings. Gamam will take practice and work. As a New Yorker, stress and struggle are a part of my everyday life. And truth be told, we tend to focus on the struggle. Whenever I think of reacting to a difficult situation, I take a deep breath and try to remember the Japanese phrase, shoganai, meaning it cannot be helped. We all experience struggles and setbacks, and we all feel pain. It is to our greatest advantage to work together, to be patient, and to cultivate more peace. Gamam also teaches us not to make a situation worse by elevating the drama. Stop, take a moment, and remember to breathe. Once you've had a chance to pause and assess things calmly, only then take action. As my mom says, gamam is about being tolerant, holding back your desires or anger, and ultimately letting them go. Don't let these negative thoughts or urges take over your life. If you keep holding on to grudges in your mind, this creates stress. Practicing gamam reduces stress. But how do you actually practice gamam? What if you are currently going through a particularly hard time? How do you stay resilient? I have experienced and have seen so many of my friends through situations where it seemed as if things would never get better. Every time, it seemed hopeless. Every time, we not only healed, but came out stronger on the other side. If you're going through some sort of setback, whether it's heartbreak, a job change, or the loss of a loved one, remember we each grieve in different ways. Acknowledge the fact that your process will be your own. Allow yourself the room to move through the stages of grief and take good care of yourself. Eat nourishing foods, go on long walks, and spend time with people who care about you and have your best interests at heart. Let your family and friends serve as a sounding board. When I was going through a difficult time recently, I also found it was helpful to avoid alcohol until I could see clearly again. No matter what, let yourself rest. Sometimes when you're going through a tough time, all you want to do is sleep. And that's okay. Sleep as much as you can. It will help you to recharge. Listen to your body more than you normally would. It will let you know what you need. Rest assured that time is going to be life's greatest healer. Life has a process, and you can trust in it. In the meantime, there are things you can do to condition yourself and prepare for the storm. Take action. As my mother taught by example, if you don't like something, don't complain. Instead, take action to change it. Instead of feeling sorry for yourself or ruminating on a bad situation, create change. Then get out there and focus on doing more of what feels good and will help you in the long run. Eat fresh. Do your best to eat fresh foods at every meal. Food is information to the cells in your body. When you nourish your body with living foods, you will feel more alive. Cut back. A few years ago, I cut excess sugar out of my diet and swapped coffee for matcha, and it has done wonders for my life. I feel less jittery and anxious. My mind feels clear, and I am more able to focus on the tasks at hand. I don't feel groggy when I wake up in the mornings, and all day long, I feel more energized. Cutting back on the things you consume on a regular basis can be a great way to gauge what feels good versus what doesn't. Get moving. The Japanese have some of the longest lifespans in the world, especially the people of Okinawa. One of the secrets of their longevity is their dedication to incorporating movement into their everyday lives. I encourage you to move your body each and every day. Regular exercise has really helped to clear my head of anxiety and depression. I like to alternate different types of movement to keep my muscles guessing and to keep my mind from getting bored. Socialize. In real life, connection is what keeps us together. Socializing with others helps to grow your own self-love and self-care. And I don't just mean the group text on your phone. Being part of a social circle and finding time to invest in that circle and community helps improve your quality of life and boosts longevity. Keeping in touch with friends from different stages and parts of your life, whether it's a weekly phone call, annual visit, or a vacation taken together to an exotic locale, can seem like a big-time commitment. But I promise it's one that pays huge dividends. Some of my closest friendships have endured decades of separation, and we remain as tight as ever after. When someone knows you for that amount of time, they've been there through thick and thin. Treasure and prize your true friendships in real life. Group workouts. To that end, I'm in love with combining movement and socialization. Group fitness is what gets me up and out of the house in the morning. There are so many classes out there, and you can surely find something that appeals to you. Try a group run, boot camp workout, cycling class, bar class, yoga class, or even just a community class, like cooking or gardening, that gets you out of your routine and connecting more in real life. Group meditation. Group meditation classes, and even group meditation centers, are becoming increasingly common. Meditating with others provides a quiet, supportive environment, and guided meditations are great for beginners. Making the time to sit and look inward really helps to focus your mind and energy. Make peace. A huge part of adapting to the lives we are given is letting go of expectations, both those we set for ourselves and those others have of us. There are many things we can't control, whether financial stress, a job loss, emotional turmoil, or the actions of a boss or a friend. The sooner we learn that we cannot control everything and make an effort to let go of those things we cannot change, the more we are able to find peace. Stay the course. The principles of Gamam, staying the course no matter what, can also be used in a practical way to push yourself to new levels of endurance and achievement. Stay focused on the journey and have faith that you are headed exactly where you're meant to be. I personally like to use the mindset of Gamam during a challenging moment or to push myself to do difficult things. You might use Gamam to help you study harder, to work better, or to accomplish more in your day. If you use the art of Gamam to endure, you can get through anything. See nothing as an obstacle, but rather a challenge. And think about how good you are going to feel once you get through the fight. Sometimes practicing Gamam is simply about letting go and being still. The greatest lesson I have learned is to let go of what was not meant to be, whether it's a relationship, a job, or a hoped-for adventure. There is power in gracefully letting something go. There is power in knowing that wherever you are in this moment is right where you are meant to be. Even if you are deep in the trenches, you are resilient. even when all you feel like doing is crying. You are a ray of light. When you begin to let go, you open up your heart to wonderful new people and exciting new opportunities. Don't let anyone or anything dim your light. Remember the practice of Gamam and shine on with resilience and grace. Part 2. Nourish. 4. Cooking. 料理. Cooking and eating nourishing foods is the foundation of my kintsugi-inspired self-care. The act of nourishing our bodies is a simple thing, but its effects are profound. Eating well allows us to respect and honor our body's needs. When I say to eat nutritiously, I don't mean that you have to eat less. I always tell my friends who are dieting to stop what they're doing and listen to their bodies instead. No body wants deprivation or restriction. What every body needs to flourish are nutrients from real whole foods, the foods that nourished my ancestors and your ancestors for centuries. That means lots of fresh produce, healthy protein, fermented foods, and unprocessed grains. Simple, seasonal, delicious food. Remember, Bachan lived until she was 96, and her skin glowed all her life. If we want to learn the secrets of Japanese wellness, we'd be wise to emulate the lifestyle of my elders. And the best way to nourish yourself is to cook for yourself. Cooking is the only art form that utilizes all five senses. I almost see it as a form of meditation. Even when I'm not in the mood to cook, even when I don't feel like going to the grocery store or taking one single pot out of the cabinet, I always find that I get into a comfortable, familiar rhythm once I start cooking. And after I've made a meal with my own hands, I'm tremendously grateful for the food that will nourish me in mind and body. Best of all, food just tastes better when you cook it yourself. Cooking comes from the heart. It is a language of love we must continue to speak to one another. East meets West in the kitchen. I started helping my mom in the kitchen when I was about 4 years old. I can remember looking up at her with her long, dark, beautiful hair, her eye for perfection, her palate for taste, and her hard-working hands. I could barely see over the counter, but I can remember everything. The smell, the sound, the feeling, the passion, the taste. My mother was talented. She was good at everything. But to me, she shined most in the kitchen. I am forever grateful for the magic she has passed on to me. With my wide Hapa eyes looking over at her for decades, I was happiest when I was in the kitchen with her. Mom and I made everything together, from homemade sushi to sekihan, red bean rice, mountain rice mix, to miso shiru, soup, tsukemono, Japanese pickles, okonomiyaki, soba, soumen, cold noodles, gyoza, udon, and, of course, mochi. In the PDF enhancement, I've included a selection of recipes that utilize Eastern and Western methods, techniques, and ingredients. Please note that these are not all super traditional Japanese recipes, but instead represent an eclectic mix of my family's recipes and my Japanese Californian heritage. I like to think that my mom perfected this hybrid cuisine, and her inspired dishes made an imprint on my soul. I may have gone to culinary school and cooked in restaurants, but my mom taught me how to really cook. Japanese pantry basics. You don't have to overhaul your pantry to make the recipes in this audiobook, but it is helpful to stock up on a few specialty items before you begin cooking. You can order all these ingredients online or find them at your local Japanese grocer. Kombutsu. Dry pantry items. Seaweed. Kombu. Japanese kelp. a Japanese seaweed that's frequently used to make kombu dashi, stock or soup. Kombu is an anti-inflammatory food that's high in iron. Kombu may help keep your metabolism in check and is full of vitamins A